Welcome to IPC's podcast, Global Electronics, The Art of the Possible. I'm John Mitchell, podcast host and president and CEO of IPC, the global association that helps manufacturers build electronics better through proven standards, certification and training, advocacy, and industry intelligence. Digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world. For next-generation manufacturers, it's essential to take a critical look at both the challenges and benefits of digital technologies, artificial intelligence, robotics, and data impacting supply chains. To ensure success, we need to start talking about the policy, sustainability, network, and workforce adoptions integral to developing the factory of the future. We want to take a broad look at some of the opportunities and challenges of creating and running the factory of the future and talk one-on-one with the industry leaders and pioneers in manufacturing and management. We will share lessons learned in implementation and what's next for technology and data management. We will also look at specific use cases, the impact on workforce, security, and how organizations can measure impact and success. Join us in exploring the factory of the future. I'm here with Joe O'Neill, CEO of Green Circuits. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So we're going to talk a little bit about Factory of the Future. And let me start off with a question here. So much of the discussion about this new decade is about how digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution. When you hear this, what does this mean to you?
It's a wide-ranging topic that's going to take years, decades to come to fruition, perhaps. But in the near-term practical, I think about things like Nike right now. You can order your shoe that you design today and have it show up tomorrow. And then you take that into electronics and the ability to make lots of one. That I want a communication device that has these features, that does this, that has an integrated project, whatever it is. And from the consumer side, that's, I think, what this is all going to eventually enable. In the near term, in the practical, in my factory today, it's basically efficiencies and execution that are enabled when you have closed loop, real time feedback from machine to machine. You've got some artificial intelligence integrated in there, and it basically takes it from you've got the robots doing what you tell them to do to the robot revolution coming. But it enables a lot of other things when you have that level of integration within your own factory. Now it goes into your supply chain and it goes upstream into your customers too, so that everyone can have that visibility and drive a lot more efficiencies.
So mass customization coming to a theater near you, and then but in terms of, you talked about near term, but this sharing of information and data back and forth, do you see that happening also in the near term? Or you also talked about decades. What pieces of that do you really feel like are today or right around the corner versus here's where we've got to make some significant investments to move other pieces forward?
I think the CFX standard helped tremendously in getting
I wasn't fishing there, but
well,
thank you.
But it's the truth, right? It's everyone had their siloed little IP that they wanted to have unique and kept everyone from talking to everyone else. We're seeing benefits of that right now, just in terms of machine programming and languages and things like that. But the ability to take bits of data from every machine, feed that back, capture it. Of great value to our manufacturing engineers, but it's also really nice. Our customers really enjoy having that level of knowledge,
visibility from the data, and
having a kind of a thin layer where you can roll that out without it being a $1 million project. Yeah. Makes things happen much more rapidly. The true benefit,
and more broadly,
of that,
too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, many more people can play.
Yeah. So, and then the true benefit of that, I think, that's what the unknown is. Now you get really good at what you do, and you have the it tends to evolve into something that you didn't see. Who knows where that is?
So we can't predict it, but by enabling these things, you get the opportunity for new innovations to happen. So along that same line on the factory of the future, so it's likely that it's going to link cybersecurity and physical security. What kind of security measures is or should the industry be taking to keep data and factories secure?
That's kind of an interesting question. That there's definitely a dichotomy there where you've got this information with a thin layer sharing openly and this kind of open architecture. And then on the other side, cybersecurity, you know, reduce points of entry, tie everything down. It'll be a very interesting one. Physical security.
Is that something you find you're concerned about in your plans? For instance, I visited a plant overseas, and we weren't allowed to bring any USB devices in. All the ports on our computers were taped closed before we walked in, and so that's one level of physical security to make sure that things don't walk out of their plant, because I think they had actually had that happen, and so they were very aware of that issue. So do you see things like that happening on the physical side, and how does that tie to cyber?
So efforts like the CMMC that's coming out of the DoD, that's got a physical element to it. It doesn't really matter how great your systems are if someone can walk in your front door and
walk out
in
with something.
I think the real risk right now, I'm much less concerned about someone strong-arming into my facility and taking some chips versus someone hacking in and
taking your data.
My whole company. So the elements, the steps that CMMC is taking, it's very similar to, I'd put it to IPC certification. Before it was, hey, I signed the attendance sheet, and therefore I'm okay. Now you're tested to get a cert, and I think that's a healthy next step in the maturity model. It needs to happen, and it is happening rapidly, but it still is a trade-off to open communication. So I think it's going to be a requirement to separate what data is
available,
is proprietary, what data is something you need to protect it. But XY data and your placement rate, I'm not too worried about that.
Sharing that information.
Creating two silos of data and having the things you need to protect really protected, and the other being communicated, not necessarily openly, but at least efficiently. Mm-hmm. I think those two paths
can coexist, and as you talk about, you know, so you have your customers, and you're an EMS company, and then you've got board shops, and you've got parts shops, and you've got materials that are going through. And as you think about maintaining that security throughout the whole piece there, there's tension there. I mean, there is the minimum, I know I need to share this information, but every time you cross a border, you're like, how am I keeping either my data or my product or whatever secure? So I think it's an interesting challenge that we'll be working on. All right. So let me shift topics just a little bit. So while artificial intelligence and robotics can yield greater efficiencies in factories, they may greatly disrupt labor markets. Knowing this, what new skills do you think will be needed to run smart factories, or what should the industry be doing to upskill workers?
I'm actually really happy about the amount of entrants we've got coming into the industry. And I think I'm now old, because they think completely differently, and they don't think about factory of the future. That's just the factory.
It's just the factory,
And it's not, can these things talk to each other? It's obviously
they're going to talk to each other.
It's always, it's just inherent. And they come in and they see things with a fresh set of eyes, and they come in with a knowledge of systems and systems integration and data exchange that is just, it's inherent. So they look at problems and solutions completely with a fresh set of eyes. So I think the future is bright, and you know, getting them a little bit of exposure to all of the wondrous potential, you know,
pitfalls.
Having them go through 610 and you know, understand the details of electronics and interconnect and solder joints and all of the fun there. That is, they're like sponges, so it's not a big hurdle. Yeah, and I think you've got to give them challenges, and you've got to give them rope, and let them go.
Give them a challenge where you already know the answer.
Yeah, because we underestimate them so much, and that's what I think leads to them jumping ship to find a bigger challenge. It's not that they don't want to be challenged, or it's too hard, or you're making me work too hard. It's that we're not stretching them, and it's a great problem.
All right, very good. So next question. We live in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world, and the future of supply chain points to fewer silos and more cross-collaboration. How can companies integrate themselves better within this network?
We spend a lot of time downstream in our supply chain, making sure that we've got visibility to components, component availability, where PCBs are being sourced, all of that in real time, through APIs and other, you know, I think CFX can do some of that into other factories downstream, but we need to do a better job upstream with our customers, and I think that's where the emphasis is going to be. Is the OEMs, they kind of know what they want, mm-hmm. But how do we take it? How do we make ourselves open and available to them so that, and get past that? Well, too much information can be a bad thing. It's been a kind of a recurring theme through the years. We just have to get over it because it's a common goal. It's more information. With more information, you can make better decisions,
right.
And then integrate and automate and just. Do a better job as a complete supply chain, realizing that we are just one link in the chain.
Yeah, and so get over our fear of, oh, they're going to see that we're not perfect.
Yep.
And as we share that, the entire system will get better because we're willing to admit our flaws. And oh, by the way, I happen to have a solution to that flaw. Well, guess what? I might be able to get
absolutely
a little help from my neighbor here.
Yeah.
Great. All right, so last question, Joe. Finally, what do you think we as an industry should be talking about more, but we aren't?
I think there's been a lot of talk through the years about reuse, recycle. I think the landfills are getting quite full. and there's been a lot of talk, but there hasn't been a ton of really effective action there. I think consumers are at the point where they've got a very good understanding of the impact on the globe, and I think they're mature to a point where they've got a level of that understanding where they're willing to pay maybe 2% for a product that's going to last twice as long, or a product that didn't have to be on an airplane or a ship and have a footprint that's really impactful. So design for upgrade, design for reuse, design for X is something that I think is really, it's time. And I think there is an opportunity for standards in that area, for for some sort of measurable rating on a package or something like that. That I think the lead-free initiative, the little green leaf, all of that was really well intended, but I still see a lot of product ending up in landfills.
There are forces that are slowing or not putting that as a priority in their factors of going forward. How do we overcome some of those forces to really, as an industry, as the electronics industry, to change our actions to match our desires?
So, not to sound cynical, but the almighty dollar rules. So sure. The consumer has the vote. And okay. If the consumer says, I want water in a plastic bottle, and I'm willing to pay for that, but I understand that if it's in a paper bottle, it has less of a footprint, maybe I'm willing to pay a little bit more for that. If they're not, you're going to keep getting plastic bottles. They vote with their pocketbook. And I think we've seen it. We've seen it with Apple. We've seen it with big companies where it's like, uh-oh, we better respond to this because we've got a market share to protect
Some companies have, even if it hasn't been the financial right decision, they said, look, we're going to take a leadership position and we will do this. Our suppliers will comply with this or they won't be our suppliers anymore. And so I can see that coming from companies. Governments is a possibility as well. There could be regulatory pieces. I wonder also if there's not an opportunity for a smaller company to partner with a bigger company and say, hey, look, we're going to do this and you can go brand that you're this efficient. And you get some of these more market forces where people go, oh, I'm going to select car X or flight with this company Y or what have you, or item from, you know, consumer electronics because you partnered with them. And it starts that almost like a grassroots, you know, direction as well.
So I think it's got to shift from being a model of regulate to a model of responsible. And it's, you know, that's just a
cultural
maturity
shift
over time.
Yeah.
I think it's time for that awareness to kick in.
Very good. I want to thank Joe O'Neill for giving us a look into what the factory of the future holds and how we can prepare. Joe, I really appreciate your time and thoughts. You can find more information on the Factory of the Future and other electronics industry news at ipc.org.